first thing you need to do is, if you don't know what your values are, or you haven't written them down or really thought about them, really ponder them. Brian, you said you like to travel, you like freedom. If you're saying to yourself, I'm getting $10,000 a month in passive income, but I've got to start a property management company, I'm stuck in a cubicle, you may hit that 10 grand a month, but you're not going to feel right. You're not going to feel aligned. So don't go for the money. The money is just the end result.
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
Gino Barbero, my man. How are you, buddy?
Brian, you just said let it rip. Let's let it rip, my friend.
Let's let it rip. Let's let it rip. You feel like letting it rip?
I let it rip every day. I got six kids. I got to let it every day, bro.
I'm very much looking forward to getting to know you because I know you from two different angles. So my buddy, Mike Taravella, and Julian, who for some reason, whenever you post a Facebook status, that's just on the borderline of, man, why did you post that? You come in with some awesome sage dad advice to kind of level it out. So I know you from your brand. I know you from what you do there, but I also know you through some of my personal buddies, man. And so I'm very excited to get to know you further.
Well, all the youngsters need to know that if you're going to be a dad, you've got to be a strong male. You want to know why? Because why? Your daughters are looking at you. If you're a cool dude and you're a great dad and you're a protector and you're a provider, guess what they're going to be attracted to?
That's
why I post that stuff, because we all need strong fathers in the family. The dissolution of the family is one of the biggest problems we have in this country right now. Lots of problems, but you can rip it down to the family. I've got six kids. To me, that's the most important entity. And ironically enough, family life and business life are practically the same thing. You need core values and mission statements in both. You need strong leadership, whether it's the mom there or the dad there, and you need those guiding principles. And it's long-termism. You got to grind it out every day with your kids. You feel like drop kicking them sometimes. You feel like doing things to them that you would never think of. They drive you nuts. But at the end of the day, it's one of the best jobs in the world, one of the most fulfilling. And that's why us as fathers, we do what we do. We do it selfishly for ourselves, but ultimately we want to create legacy skills. We want to create legacy wealth, generational wealth, whatever you want to call it. But I want to teach my kids the values that I've grown up to be, and I want them to be part of my life, and I want them to be my legacy.
Let's park it there for a second. So I think that's interesting, because my life is talking to people that are successful in business life in general. And normally the people that get successful in life first translate to business a lot better. So this is my day now, and this is what I do. A lot of people, I say, hey, man, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? What do you want? Beginners, intermediate, advanced, $10,000 a month in passive income from cash flow and real estate so that I can quit my job. Okay, cool. To do what? To spend time with my family, to be more present with my family, to go travel the world. Okay, why don't you do that right now?
Exactly.
So exactly your point, because I think people get lost in this end destination that they need to do X, Y, Z to do this, and that there's no gray area in between. What's some advice you can give to people that are on that journey? Because I know that we can get into your backstory here, because this is something that you and I were going off on off camera. People on the journey between leaving their old life and their old self and their new life and their new self in the transitory period. What's some advice you can give to them for being present in that time and enjoying the journey?
Well, I think if you're not on the journey, you're dead, because that's the bottom line. And you're always trying to grow. If you're not growing, you're dying. People say that. I can reference a couple of books, The Gap and the Gain by Dr. Ben Hardy. It's a fantastic book. I mean, talk about who, not how, but The Gap and the Gain really talks about the journey as to, you talk about right now, what does your future see? You really need to look into your future, into what you want your life to be like, because you need to reverse engineer that into what you want to start doing now. You value freedom. You value going away. You may not be able to do that today, but what steps do you need to take to have that life that you want to have in 30 years? You can start doing it right now in smaller increments, but if you don't know what you ultimately want and what you need to focus on, how are you going to achieve it? That's why you really need to look out into the future and see exactly what you want. Most of us don't have that, don't do that. And myself included earlier on. And I think the other thing we really need to flesh out is our values. Every decision you make is values-based decision-making. If it doesn't fit with your values, if it doesn't feel right, for me, for instance, I started Jake and Gino. I wanted freedom. I wanted the ability to impact others. I wanted to become successful. I didn't want to go on the road every weekend to be one of these gurus talking on stage because I did value my family time. I came from the restaurant industry that I worked every weekend. I worked every holiday. I didn't want to do that with Jake and Gino. Now, if I became famous and I started talking on stage every weekend, I'm hitting my value. I'm hitting the goal of becoming famous and becoming an international speaker. But at the same time, it's not aligned with my values. So you need to align your values with your decisions. And it's really important to get crystal clear what your values are. And for me, it's impact. And I think another one of my values, it is family, but it's really creating a family business. That's what Jake and Gino really is. We're not going to become a $100 million a year education company. That's not my goal. I want to create impact with my employees. I've always worked with my family. So I want to treat my company as a family company. And I also want my kids to come to all of our events. We do 6 or 7 events a year, internal. And then we have our flagship. The kids are always there. I started a podcast with my wife. I've written children's books with my wife. So she's part of the business as well. So incorporating all of that, and every time a decision comes up, does it fit my values? So for everybody out there, first thing you need to do is if you don't know what your values are, or you haven't written them down or really thought about them, really ponder them. Brian, you said you like to travel. You like freedom. If you're saying to yourself, I'm getting $10,000 a month in passive income, but I've got to start a property management company. I'm stuck in a cubicle. You may hit that 10 grand a month, but you're not going to feel right. You're not going to feel aligned. So don't go for the money. The money is just the end result. That's what you're doing. You're chasing opportunity. And we all should know that intuitively, but we don't. For some reason, I don't know why. Once you become financially free and you have that number, then opportunities come and say, okay, I don't need to do that opportunity. I'm not going for the cash. I'm going for this opportunity. This deal's coming and it's okay. And it's just one of those weird things. It's just, it's really lack of money creates a lack of scarcity. Once somebody has more money in their life and they're not really looking at money as an object, money really drives one thing for you. It gives you comfort and it gives you freedom. That's ultimately what it gives you. And it gives you more choices. The quality of your life really depends about the quality of your choices. We're going to Hawaii this summer, for instance. I've never flown first class with the family. It's going to cost me 25 G's. Never done that before. Never would have thought about that 5 years ago. Now it's really money. I have the opportunity. It's an experience. It's something that I want to do. I don't have to do it to make myself happy, but it's an option. Whereas 5 years ago, I didn't have the option. 5 years ago, I was worried about paying for braces. Now I'm thinking about first class. That's the only difference that money allows you. It gives you the optionality. It gives you the freedom to make choices. And it gives you the opportunity to say, I don't want to work with this person. Or I don't want to do this deal. I can defer that and look for something different. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You're preaching to the choir. So you are talking from the perspective and the angle. So the goal of all of this, for everyone listening, we are going to give you episode after episode of vehicles to take you down the road, this wealth building journey to get to the end. In the meantime, like I just told Gino previously, half of these conversations are going to be advice that you get normally at the end of the wealth building journey that you can go ahead and apply now during the wealth building journey. So what Gino is speaking as is a man that is emotionally unattached to money anymore. Money is a tool. It's a piece of paper. It's something that we can use interchangeably. It's a lever that we can pull to be able to accessorize and complement our life and maybe serve as a form of lubrication. So it makes things a little smoother, a little easier, and it lets people take a breath and go, who am I? Like, what do I actually want to do? How do I want to be significant? What kind of impact do I have on this world? Gino, I want to take you back right now to you before in your restaurant and when you were a chef before, correct?
Yep.
Okay, I want to take you back to that story that you and I were talking about the $10 an hour story and then how that was your mental shift to say, hey, what am I doing? How am I valuing my time here?
So I want everyone to picture this. It's around 2014, late 14. It's cold. It's the wintertime. I have a restaurant. And I'm in my shed at my restaurant and I'm stacking all the groceries away. I've got bags of flour. I've got cans of tomatoes. I'm putting everything away. Those to-go container tins. I'm stocking everything up there. And literally, at the time, I could pay somebody $10 an hour to do that. But I'm a guy. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I didn't realize it. It made me feel comfortable. I was in my comfort zone and I thought I was doing things. I thought I was being productive. You get paid on results. You don't get paid on being busy or being productive. Another ding, ding that I realized. I'm sitting there and I'm in the shed and I get a phone call from Jake. I get the cell phone. And for you guys on YouTube, I've got the cell phone here and I'm putting tins away. And I am in the process. We already have about 350 units. I'm in the process of negotiating an $11 million, 281 unit deal. Owner financed, zero. And that's when I said to myself, I said, what am I doing out here doing this work? I'm hiding from everybody when I should be in there, down there, crunching the numbers, working on negotiation. And that's when I said to myself, I made it that point right there. It was February of 2015. We closed that deal in August. When I had that phone call, I said, within the next year, I will have left this restaurant. Now, I should have probably left it sooner, but I did have six kids. I did have a responsibility to my brother. My brother was a partner in the restaurant. All excuses. Some of them viable, some not viable. But for me, that was the turning point. And that's when I said to myself, I really need to dive into personal development. I need to dive into psychology. And that was the point when I said, put the phone down. I said, Jake, we're going to close this deal. We ended up closing the deal. But that's when I really dove into life coaching. I wanted to go to life coaching school to figure out what my why was, to figure out empowering questions, how to figure out and to set proper goals. Because we can all set goals. But are you setting goals based on what your identity is or what you want it to be? Are you setting goals based on your values, or you're setting goals based on what your perception of who you are. All these things are important based on any kind of energy blocks that you have. These are all things that you need to take into consideration. And I wasn't. I was just saying, I want to do another deal. I want to do another deal. Keep climbing the mountain, do this deal, go to the next one. Not really enjoying that process. And I want people to enjoy that wealth building process because there's going to be some challenges. But like I said, the gap and the gain, we're too often living in that gap. We're sitting there in that gap and worrying about and comparing ourselves to other people when we should really be in the gain and saying, hey, I'm here. I'm on the journey. I am where I need to be in order to where I need to get to. And I think if most of us realize that, we'll be energized by that. We'll be more focused. We'll be more clear and we will be more happy. We'll be more enjoyable.
Hit a little bit more about the gap and the gain and the principles.
When I read the book, I said to myself, I've been looking for this book for years. And Dan Sullivan created this concept years and years ago. I just never did strategic coach. I never did that. I never did business coaching with him. And for me, when we measure goals, the most important thing that I got from the book is we're looking at goals. Goals are the result, right? Mm-hmm. That's what James Clear says in Atomic Habits. We don't fall in love with the system or the process. Fall in love with that system or the process. Fall in love with underwriting deals if you're in real estate. Fall in love with the negotiation. Fall in love with the property tours. Fall in love with speaking to investors. Because if you fall in love with those systems, ultimately, you're going to find the deal. And when you're measuring goals, don't always just look forward. Look back. It's like when you're going through a tunnel. And all of a sudden, you're driving through that tunnel. And you can see light. It's really far. But as you keep driving, you're getting a little bit closer. Turn around and see where you've come from. And appreciate that. And it's, wow, I didn't know I've accomplished so much. And you'll appreciate that. And there's that gratitude component to it. When you live in gratitude, you can't live in fear. When you're grateful for what you have, and you're always thinking about what you don't have, that's the problem. Be grateful for what you have and just constantly stay on that journey. And don't be afraid to change the journey, because as you grow, things become less important to you. You may get a skill set that you like. But really, ultimately, it comes down to trying not to live in that gap of negativity all the time. And listen, we always do. It's like a child. You give them five spoons. You take one away, they have four. They start screaming because you took one away. But they had zero before. Now they've got four, but they're looking at the one they don't have. We do that every day as adults. Catch yourself doing that and try to say to yourself, hey, at least I've got four. I had zero to begin with. So that to me is the crux of the book. I thought it was an amazing book. Awesome book.
I think that I agree with you first off, and thank you for sharing that. I think that whenever you get into really big rooms and you start doing that part, that you start ticking that box in your life and you realize that you're the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
And then you start getting into really big rooms with people doing really big things. Byproduct of that, mm-hmm. a lot of people don't talk about is you start living in the gap.
Oh, yeah.
Living in the gap. Start living in the gap. So now I'm in a group text with people, they're like, I just closed 300. So we talked about Mike. He's like, I just closed the 300 unit. Well, he works with you. Mm-hmm. So he just closed the 300 units. Somebody else is like, I just wholesaled like 20 houses. I just made 80 grand this week. And then it's, mm-hmm. oh, crap. What am I doing? Mm-hmm. What am I doing? What's going on? Mm-hmm. And so whenever you're looking at somebody, for people listening, whenever you're looking at somebody, be careful when you're in these rooms to not have that feeling of I'm not enough, mm-hmm. or I'm not far enough on my journey. every single person has value. Every single person needs to come to steal from Tony Robbins, like I'm sure you're familiar with him, mm-hmm. be in a peak state, operate from that perspective.
Yeah.
Because that's where the rubber meets the road. So, Gino, question for you, because you cover both sides of this. So your perspective really interests me here. I tell people, you need a coach and you need a mentor. A lot of the times people are looking for that in one person. A lot of the times I say that isn't just one person, mm-hmm. it's multiple. So coach to help you with your mindset, your clarity, your personal development, getting out of your own way and realizing what's actually possible beyond your prior conditioning and what society has told you is possible. That's mm-hmm. your coach. Your mentor is going to be somebody that helps you with the specific vehicle. So you fall under both of these camps because you do coaching and you do mentorship through mm-hmm. Jake and Juno. Which one of these ideas or which one of these verticals or which one of these people do you think is more important to get into your life first on this wealth building journey? Or do you think it's walking hand in hand down the path?
I think the first thing to get into your journey is free. Go to free resources, go to podcasts, start listening to people that you resonate with, because that's what it really comes down to. If you don't believe in your coach, behaviors are belief driven. If you don't believe in your coach or your mentor, you're not going to believe that you're going to be able to succeed in that venture. Consume as much free stuff as possible. That's the first thing. Just don't expect to become successful through it, or expect it a lot longer of a journey to do it, because there's nobody holding you accountable. You could be in your office. You're not doing anything. You don't have any calls. Hey, listen, I was on the beach at 3:30. I was telling you 30 minutes ago. I needed to be back home at 4:00 for this call. If I didn't have this call, the rest of this afternoon would be completely gone. So that accountability is one of the most important things that we need to become successful in life. Because if we're on an island all by ourselves and nobody's watching us and there's no pressure on us, that's why my partnership with Jake is pretty fantastic. Because you know what? Jake's not on this call right now, but you know what? He's doing a property tour today. So we're doing different things and we're holding each other accountable. So for coaching, there's so many different types of coaches. You can have a business coach, you can have a personal development coach, you can have a life coach. They are going to talk strategically as well as coaching for development, as well as coaching for performance, right? That those are two different things. When you're coaching for development, you're developing yourself, developing your mindset. We all need that. That's really important. But coaching for performance, I can teach anybody about a cap rate, about a cash on cash return, about a debt coverage ratio. And for me, that's easy. It's the psychological that's more challenging. And that's why we did create the Jake and Gino community. I would call it a mentorship program, but it's more of a community of like-minded individuals, because a lot of people that get into multifamily, they're high-income W-2 earners. They're people getting in from single families, and they hear every day from their family and friends who don't own crap, and they probably have a negative net worth, that real estate is risky. You can't hear that every day. That's drivel. You have to be around people who are succeeding, who are successful. You've got students who've closed over 35,000 units, over $2 billion in assets under management. You have peers within the group. You have coaches within the group. We have these, you know, on-site intensive that we're all there. You need to have that around you. I didn't have that. I had mentorship programs, but I never went to any of these live events. And I really, truly, one of my biggest mistakes that I think that's why I said to myself, I know when I start this community, I'm not going to be doing these two-day seminars where I'm going there myself and trying to, I don't have time to do that. I'd rather have people who are already part of the community come to these events and sit down and listen to our coaches speak for 2 days and be able to network, because networking is really massive. Because when you're in here, at these mastermind groups, they're charging 100 grand a year. Are they worth 100 grand a year? Not for the education, but you make one connection. That's all you need. And that's what the power of community and mentorship and education is. It's not really just the education aspect of it. It's really the accountability and the connections that you make within these communities.
And it's so hard to explain to someone.
It really is.
Because everyone tries to quantify relationships.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
And so it's hard to get across. So here's what I would recommend. I make similar points every single episode. So the point that I will make, as per usual, is that there is no better investment than investing in yourself and your community ever. Because now it gives you a certain sense of confidence mm-hmm. that makes things unstoppable. It makes you unstoppable. Mm-hmm. Because now, like, I'm not buying apartment complexes yet, but I know I'm a couple of text messages away from anybody that is. And I know that I've got the mindset to where I would be comfortable taking that down. Conceptually, I haven't learned how to underwrite. I haven't learned how to do any of that. But like you said, then you just plug and play another Ben Hardy, Dan Sullivan, bring in the Who. And then all of a sudden you're off to the freaking races.
Yes.
Can you walk us through that transitory period? Because right now you are actually, just take a pause here. Let's actually introduce ourselves here. So Jake and Gino, 50% of it, maybe introduce yourself about where you're at now, where your portfolio is at right now. Let people know who you are, besides the fact that you can casually fly your entire family first class to Hawaii for 25 G's. And tell us who you are, and then let's take a step back from there and then walk through that journey from the restaurant to where you're at right now.
Real quick, father of six homeschool kids. My oldest daughter is 22 years old. She's a missionary, graduated college. My youngest daughter is 7. I have an amazing wife, Julie and Gino Show. Go check it out on iTunes. We have about 1,500 units. One deal is syndicated. The rest of the portfolio is owned by Jake, myself, and a partner. And our employees are starting to invest in our deals. So we've shied away from syndication. We've got enough capital. We're buying our own deals. We've been able to refinance out over $20 million out of our portfolio, not buy the Lambo, invest in the next deal, invest in the next deal. That's how we've been able to do it. And for us, we started Jake and Gino 6-7 years ago. It's just for fun, really to learn, do, and teach. And it was an amazing, for me, journey. How many times in your life can you speak to Robert Kiyosaki, T. Harv Eker, Stephen Pressfield, Nir Eyal? The list goes on and on. It's just amazing. That's why I started education, really to learn myself and then to be able to help and impact others and to show it as a vehicle. And it's more of that abundance mindset. When you're studying the education program, it's not really about monetizing. It's really, we try to create something called multifaceted multifamily, where it really fit into one of the spokes of what investing was. You have the investment vehicle, then you have the property management, which is another stream of revenue. Then we started the education, which was another stream of revenue. Then we started the syndication company, which was another stream of revenue. Now we've got RAND Development. We're going to start developing deals. We've got a flooring company coming online. So there's so many different revenue streams that you can start from real estate. Didn't know that. I started the restaurant business years and years ago with the family. I had one restaurant for 20 something years, got burned out, didn't know anything about business, tried to scale it up, but didn't understand how to scale that business. And it was hard because it was weekends, holidays. It was almost like a W-2 kind of job where you're on the hamster wheel every week. You're not really building wealth. You're not building equity in a business. And for me, I struggled. I didn't like that. I wanted to leave a legacy. And ultimately, I ended up finding real estate. I ended up finding Jake. We bought our first deal, then our second deal, and the rest is history. But let me share with you the power of mentorship. On our third deal, we had about 60 units, and I was working with another mentor. This third deal was 136 units. It was sizable. It was $4 million at the time. Now it's not a lot, but it was just me, Jake, and my partner. And as we're going through due diligence, as we're going through underwriting, I'm working hand in hand with the mentor. And Jake thinks I'm this freaking genius. He's like, "Where'd you get this, doc? How do you know where to take over this? How do you have the unit turn? How do you have a credibility book?" And I didn't tell him anything until the deal was closed. And I'm like, dude. And every time a question popped up, I was able to go to my mentor and say, "What do we do about this?" Even the fact that the broker, we were tapped out at price. We had no more money. We had no more money at all. The broker took a commission. He took a seller finance note on his commission for 50 grand. What's that worth? Is that worth a $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 investment with the mentor? I think so. I wouldn't be here with you right now if I didn't close that deal. That third deal was seminal. Like you said, those moments in life. And I learned so much education from that one mentor. And it's taken me, now I'm sharing the same education that I learned from him. I'm sharing it with our community as well.
Give some advice about how you attracted that mentor into your life and how people that are listening to this, a couple of different ways that they could go about adding massive value to be able to attract a mentor. Because the advice that I give to people is be very clear and concise in your ask, and also be very to your mentor, and then also be very clear and concise in who you're looking for in a mentor, to where when you do talk to them, it's like a sniper rifle approach instead of a shotgun. That's the advice I normally give. I'm very curious to hear how you got that mentorship and then how you materialize all this and any advice that you can give on that.
Our community director, Josh Rusin at Jake and Gino, says it best, and I will rip it off from him. Pay to play or seek to serve. Those are the only two ways. And it depends on how old you are. If you're young and you got no bucks, go out there, do the property tours, ask the questions, you know, pack the books, do whatever it takes. But when you're older and you've got the restaurant and you've got other businesses going on and you can't do it, I had to pay the mentor. I paid for the education. And I'm really confusing it. I didn't really pay for it. I invested in the education. That's the other thing that happens when you start becoming an entrepreneur, you start thinking about it. You're investing in yourself. You are your best asset. So don't think of education as an expense. Think of it as an investment. Once you start thinking of it that way, wow, you need an upgrade. Every year, you should be doing things differently. Your brain needs to be upgraded every year because it's like your computer or your cell phone. If you don't upgrade it, you're working with the same kind of software and you start burning out. So if you're looking for a mentor, if you're going to do an unpaid one, you better be able to not waste that person's time. You better be able to add tremendous value. If there's somebody out there who's looking for an acquisitions person and you're a good underwriter, maybe you do underwriting for free for a little while to get in the door. Maybe if they've got a property management company, you want to sit in their office and help property manage. If you're great at systems and you love Google Docs and Google Sheets and you find Jake and Gino, we suck at that. Hey, can I help you out with that? However, you can provide value just to get a peek behind the curtain, but you need to provide tremendous value because all of these people are so high level, they don't have time to waste with you. You're asking for them. So remember that you're seeking to serve. And if not, you're either going to pay to play. That's the bottom line. I've paid hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for the education. And it's come back hundredfold for me because like I said, how do you quantify it? We're stuck at 500 units. We don't know how to scale a business. So we hire scaling up coaches and they teach us about core values and mission statement and values and implementing different systems in our business. If not, we'd have 1,000 units. We wouldn't even know how much money we're making. We wouldn't know what kind of key performance indicators. As Jake would say, it would be a shit show. That's what it would be if we didn't get educated. So what is
paltry?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what you really need to focus on. Even when you're looking for a partner, what kind of value are you bringing to your partnership? It could be really hard work. Perseverance, persistence. There's not a lot of people on the planet right now that want to work really super, super hard. If that's you and you find a partner and you're going to give all out and you're not making any excuses ever, it's amazing because Jake, I've never heard Jake say, I'm tired, I'm sick. He's been sick multiple times. He had COVID a couple months ago. He was doing property tours. He was out there being busy, not making excuses. So if that's your superhuman strength, use it. And that's how we've been able to create a great partnership. And that's how I've looked at certain different, you know, opportunities, whether it's to mentor or go into coaching programs, try to add value to people.
I love having a podcast, man. I just love it. I know you do too, because it's like you have all of these ideas and you have all these concepts. And I always say that the ideas and the information isn't where the rubber meets the road. It's the articulation, the simplistic articulation of information is the person that can take really complex things and break them down into a statement. That's the person that's going to get all the riches in the world. Pay to play or seek to serve. Mm-hmm. Sorry, buddy. I got to steal that one.
It's all yours, my friend.
I will credit you today and tomorrow for it. But every single podcast episode, there's a quote like that. Another good one is my good friend, David Osborne. I think you're familiar with him. Yep. Plant trees, manage orchards.
I like that.
He said, plant trees, manage orchards. Every investment, every business is a tree. You plant each and every tree, and then you hire someone to come in and manage the orchard.
So I want to give you another one. Bo Burlingham yesterday, he wrote the book, Small Giants. We interviewed him yesterday, and he had a quote on profit. So it goes to the effect of profit is just your customers' applause. That's all it comes down to. The more people that are applauding you, the more money you're going to make. That's really what it comes down to. That's what profit is. And that's, think about that. I mean, you think of it from that perspective, it doesn't seem as icky as they try to make profit. Profit is just your customers' applause. Somebody that really loves your product and is really valuing your product.
Oh man, that one's good. Yeah. Oh, we could go into quote battle back to back. But man, oh my God, it's so fantastic. So anyways, bringing it back. I love how you went about this. I love how you went about the process of pay to play, seek to serve. People listening to that, write it down again, underline it. That's what you got to do. Question for quality control here. You and I have enough of an extended network to be able to spot a sham from someone that's worth their salt, worth their weight in gold very easily. We both know. For someone listening that maybe doesn't have that bullshit detector, what are some ways that they can make sure to vet somebody as a coach or as a mentor if they're choosing the pay to play option? What are some levers that they can pull to be able to make sure that the person that they're hitching their wagon to is worth their weight and not just somebody that has a Ferrari rented on Instagram?
You scour the depths of the internet. I'll challenge anybody right now. They will not find one negative review on Jake and Gino. I'm sure a couple of people post negative reviews after this podcast, but go to
Thanks, buddy.
go to the Better Business Bureau, go to Google, go everywhere. You won't find one. That's the first place is just dive deep in the internet. The second thing you really need to do is if you're going to be working with us, have, you know, ask to be able to speak to some of the clients, some of the customers. Go out there and say, I want to speak to this student, I want to speak to that student, I want to speak to that student. The next thing is go to their events. See if there's any events out there that they're hosting, which you can actually go and speak. The next thing is just Google them, call them up and talk to them and just listen to what their message is. And when you hear our podcast, and we had a show with Andrew Cordell talking about brand. When everyone hears the Jake and Gino brand, he says, what's the one word that really highlights your brand? And for me, it's family. So if you resonate with you need to resonate with the message that mentor has, and take a peek or behind the curtain and see, do they really own 1,500 units? Do they really have those assets? You can see the assets that we have online. Go drive by, go take a look. Brand Property Management, we have those assets. Do they have the results that you're looking for? And if you keep diving deeper and diving deeper, the sales process that we employ, we call it same side selling. We're not going to work with just any individual. You're going to go through a goal setting exercise, same side selling. You're finding impact together, that fit model where I'm just not going to take somebody on because I'm going to get on calls with the students as well. They're going to be coming to the events. They are part of the brand. So I have to be careful with who I bring into my community as well. And that's not posturing or anything. That's just reality. Because once you start getting poisonous apples into the well, you need one or two and it will ruin the entire community. So it works both ways. If you're going to join a community, what can you bring to that community as well? Because there's going to be other members in there that you're going to want to work with. And talk to the other members. Go on their Facebook page. See what their likes, what their interests are as well. You're going to see a lot of our members are faith-based. They have families. They're just hardworking people looking to find another way to be able to reclaim some of their freedom. That's what multifamily is all about. And ultimately, we like to say we create multifamily entrepreneurs. So if you're looking to go down that road, we're all open. But if you're looking to go down the road, flip some apartments, buy a couple Lambos, we're probably not the right fit.
Gino, you just gave me the title for this podcast, buddy. It's going to be Putting the Family in Multifamily.
Yes, that's I like that.
Speaking of which, Gino, I'm pissed at you. As soon as I said that, Mark Henteman, you had on your show.
Yes.
What did you title the show? The Multifamily Guy. And I had Mark on my show. And I was so excited you named the show The Multifamily Guy. And I said, Jake and Gino, you salty. Yeah,
it's interesting with Mark. He's part of the Jake and Gino community. He's
going to be at persona.
Yes, he's going to be at our event in March. We have a boot camp in March, about 170 students. He's going to be there because he actually found this partner in Jake and Gino. Super wealthy guy. He was really successful before, but he took his real estate to the next level. And for those of you out there, a person who has an 8-figure net worth is joining a mentorship community. Do you want to know why? He had a problem. He needed to solve that problem. We solved the problem for him. We should have charged him a lot more money, but it's okay. He got his value. But the important thing was he found a partner in the community. He was able to invest outside of California and expand it. And he's really busy doing what he's doing. He loves what he's doing, but he knows ultimately he wants to create this freedom. So when he's done with this job, he's got all this residual income looking for the long term. And that's what the problem we were able to solve. And he's a cool dude. Beat you to it.
Yeah. So let's use him. I'm going to use him as my mind just works in ways that I can create segues out of anything. It's just like a party game for me now. But now I'm going to use Mark as a segue here. So Mark, for people listening, one of the co-founders of Family Guy, he's one of the writers. If you go down, he's like the third, fourth episode of this podcast. He came on and told about his entire story. At a GoBundance event, where we're diving into his portfolio, and there are groans and aches and moans from the crowd because they said, Mark, where's your cash flow, man? Where's your cash flow? You've got all this equity. Like, it's all sitting there trapped, like little soldiers. We're like, where's your cash flow? And he goes, oh, I don't care about cash flow. He's like, I care about equity. That's what I care about. I do equity plays. I buy for appreciation. So I want to use this as a segue into your take on cash flow versus appreciation. And yeah, you're putting the shoulders back. You're ready to rip, man.
Well, you cash know flow versus appreciation. You talk about the segue. Years ago, I was a cash flow guy all the way. If it don't cash flow, you let the grass grow. That's what it comes down to. Use that one, my friend. I'll give you another one. Cash flow gets you out of your job. Equity keeps you out of your job. That's the bottom line. Now, Mark Henteman has a different thing going on than the average person. He loves his job.
$2 million a year. Yeah.
He doesn't need cash flow, but he understands. We've coined the term, our coach, Bill Hamm. Think of a conveyor belt. You're putting deals onto this conveyor belt. You want to put these deals on. They need the cash flow because you need to pay all the bills and you need to have a little bit of money left over. But where do you make your money? in real estate? Honestly, where do you make the chunk of your money? You're buying a $100,000 home, for example. What do you make a cash flow per month? $300 to $400 a month, $400. At the end of 2 years, you made $8,000. What's that house worth at the end of 2 years? $150,000. So you just made $45,000 in equity in 2 years versus $8,000 in cash flow. Now, I'm not saying that's not important. What I would do is I would refi that money out. You're creating equity, and that equity, you complete it and you turn it back into more deals. So that equity is powerful by creating, because you're just refining that money and putting it into more deals. And by creating that equity, you're able to create cash flow through that equity. So it's really important. You need both. You need the cash flow. And right now we have a significant amount of cash flow because we own our own deals, and the cash flow snowball keeps growing and growing. What I would love everybody on this podcast to do would be to own maybe 50, 60, 100 units just by yourself with a partner, be able to cash flow $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 a month, and be able to say, that's paying me every month. I don't have to worry about my bills. Then let's focus on some other things where you can have those equity plays, where you're going to get those big paychecks in 2 to 3 years, but you need to put them on that metaphorical conveyor belt so they can start matriculating. So year two, year three, you keep stacking these deals. And by year five, they're coming off the conveyor belt, whether it's a sale of equity, whether it's a refinance, and the next deal comes back on. So if you can think of it that way, you'd be like, oh, okay, it makes sense, because he's right. At equity play, that's his market. That's where he can invest. So if that's the market you're investing in, you have to think of yourself. I think Brian Burke said on one of our podcasts, what kind of investor are you? If you're older and you're looking to retire, that cash flow play may be for you. You may be looking for yield. But if you're younger and you're looking to grow your net worth, because people, you need net worth. You need that equity to be able to invest, that ownership to be able to invest. So if you're younger, that equity may be great. Look for a balance of both, depending on what market you're investing in.
Yeah, and it's the difference between the different seasons of life, right? Yes. Wealth creation versus wealth preservation. So most 90% of the people listening to this show or any podcast like this are going to be in the wealth creation stage. Quick question, hard stop at 5, or are you good for a little bit more?
Good for a little more.
Ah, yes. It's music to my ears, man. Okay, cool. Because I got a couple other rabbit holes I got to take you down. Because otherwise, I'd be committing a business podcast sin. Because we've talked a lot about the intrinsic stuff and the internal stuff. Now I want to get down into the actual multifamily.
Sure.
Committing a sin if I don't ask Jake and Gino about what their view of the market is. But first, I want to park you at what you just said. You said about owning 50 to 100 units yourself and with a partner. Mm-hmm. So you would recommend that approach as opposed to having somebody, so maybe have $50,000, you and a partner throw $100,000 into a deal, take down 50, 100 units, do something like that instead of going as an LP in a syndication.
You know, there's so many different ways to do it, but ultimately my ultimate goal for everybody would be ownership for themselves. If you need to start out with syndication and you don't have money, then you start out the syndication route. But ultimately, I want everyone to have their own autonomy. I don't want them to have bosses. When you're in syndication, you have bosses. They're your investors. That's the bottom line. And there's nothing wrong with that because we've syndicated deals. But from what I'm seeing, man, being happy and having a portfolio that's yours, that you don't have to worry about selling. You don't have to worry about doing anything. It's your own decision. You have your own autonomy. That's going to bring you a lot of happiness and a lot of control. But during the stage, there's going to be growing pains. That's why the conveyor belt is important, getting these deals on the conveyor belt. Partnering up with other people, doing creative financing, syndication, JVs. These are all tools in the tool belt of multifamily. And knowing when to use them in whatever part of the market cycle you're in is going to be important. Right now, syndication may become a little more challenging in the coming months because deals aren't making sense. There's very little returns right now in these deals. And it may be a little bit more challenging to syndicate deals. When I first started, syndication was hard. There's no money out there. Back in 2010, 2011, there was a lot of creative financing. Banks weren't really lending. There's a lot of deals and there wasn't a lot of capital. So syndication really wasn't the play back then. It was more of ownership. Cap rates were a lot higher. So you just have to figure out what part of the market cycle is and then choose the vehicle or the strategy that really works well in that part of the cycle.
Okay. I love that you say that. Because I talked to a lot of syndicators. I just had Jay Scott, ironically. I just had Jay and Ashley Wilson, Bardown Investments. So got both of them. Ashley, if you are listening to this, Ashley's episode released today. It's Thursday. I forget which day it is. I think the 23rd of February. But when they're running their syndication, they're underwriting a 10-year deal. Mm-hmm. But they're also, everyone's nervous about being caught with their pants down with a 2 to 3 to a 5 year hold here. Mm-hmm. Once you go out, zoom out to 10 years and your horizon is out that far, it's okay. So I guess owning these assets yourself to where you're not going to be beholden to your investors, mm-hmm. that is almost another form of a safety net almost, right?
Yes. And the thing is, it's very difficult to find investors that want to have a 10-year time horizon. Go raise capital and tell people, yeah, I'm going to hold your money for the next 10 years. It's a really hard thing to do. How do I know? We tried in our second syndication. We had to drop it down to 5 to 7 years. And we exited that deal after 2.5. So it was great. Everything worked out. When you underwrite for a long time frame, that 10 year, it's very, people don't. And it's unfortunate because wealth creation is really started by owning these assets. Our first deal in 2013 was a little crappy 25 unit crack den, literally crappy deal. Single families, little cottages. The rents were $350. The rents now are $995 plus rubs. That deal every month is printing us $9,000 a month on one deal. If we had sold it and doubled our money, we would have gotten the equity out. But that's what I'm talking about. I didn't have to sell it because we didn't have investors. It's an easy asset. The appreciation is, it's probably tripled in price. We have cost segregation on it and it's paying us every month. So we have more options. When we own the deal ourselves, we can sell it and we're not beholden to investors or an IRR. I'm not worried about that with these kinds of deals. So that's why we like to buy deals ourselves. We don't want to syndicate anymore. Now, if a big opportunity comes along, obviously we're going to syndicate. But for us, it is really an amazing tool to get into multifamily syndication, because if you don't have the money and you need to start, it's great because you can generate tons of fees. There's acquisition fees, disposition fees, refi fees, construction management fees, asset management fees. It's a great way. You're getting cash flow on day one from a lot of these fees. And then on the back end is where you crystallize it. But what you can do is, if you're someone like Jay Scott, who's flush, love you, Jay, you can put money on the LP side. So you're not only getting GP ownership, but you're putting money on the limited partner side and you're getting that passive income from there. So you can work it both ways. So there's Brandon so many Carter. Different ways, exactly, to skin a yep. cat. Exactly. You're investing in your own deals, 8%. But you're also getting, yeah, exactly. So there's so many ways to look at a deal. And I would just say, try to learn all the strategies, because the more, like I said, options you have on looking at a deal, the more options you're going to be able to take that deal down.
So talking about market cycles, so whip out your Ouija board, your crystal ball, so you can be able to see into the future here, just like everyone else that talks about multifamily here. So obviously we can't predict 100%, but now we are in a very odd time as we are recording this. Russia and Ukraine are dropping bombs now. Things are happening there and interest rates are starting to rise again. Things are starting to get a little wonky. I'm in GoBundance. I know you're familiar. Everyone is talking, okay, what do we still want to be foot on the gas here? Or do we want to start thinking preservation? What diversification do we want to do here?
Like, it's funny. By a show of hands, I wish I had a crowd out there. How many people thought that real estate was at a high in 2018? How many people thought we were at 219? Yeah. How many people thought we were at 220? How many people thought 21? People think 22. The only time you can tell when there's a high is our infamous Bill Hamm likes to say, our coach, is you look back and you go, oh, there was the high. You're never going to know where the high is. That's just the reality. And this COVID accelerated a lot of things. They dumped a ton of money that nobody could have predicted. You don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 months. I think this whole Russia thing is, they're probably going to use it as an excuse to be able to not raise interest rates. So I think they're going to hold interest rates. I think that's going to help. I just think there's just so much money in the market right now. People are looking for yield. And Brian, you've got an asset right now. You're going to sell it to Gino. Brian, where are you going to do the money? Where are you putting the money? You have nowhere to put it. So you're not going to sell it. That's the problem.
The irony. That's the entire housing market. That's the single family housing market. People can't sell their houses because where the hell are they going to buy?
Exactly. And the other problem is that there's not enough supply of houses. So our renters are trying to buy a home. They're priced out. Instead, they get stuck renting a home and they're still renting from us. Rents have gone up 20% year over year. So there's going to be a really big pinch. I think what happened back in January is demand for products really crashed, but prices didn't come down. That's the irony. I mean, that's what's going on right now. I think if the market really takes a dive as far as consumer confidence, as far as spending and all, does the government come back in and inject more money? That question is unanswered. But the way I see things going, asset prices are not going to drop, unfortunately, people. That's the reality. Dr. Peter Linneman talked about it. When you give banks trillions of dollars, what do banks do? They lend money to asset buyers. And that's what's been happening.
That's Blackstone, BlackRock.
And don't think this is going to be a 2008 because the banks are flush with cash. They've got tons of reserves. So that's not happening. They're dropping LTVs. So all these private equity firms, all these family offices are coming in with tons of money and they're taking the long-term view. They're not going to cash flow today or tomorrow. They're buying two caps. But in 5 years, when rents are up 50%, their assets have been up, they're going to be looking back and going, thank God I did that because my money right now is in banking and it's making 0.2%. Take taxes out of it. I'm going real negative with inflation. So for us, it's the three pillars of real estate. It's market cycle, it's debt, and it's exit strategy. Everyone that is looking at a deal right now, whether you're in single family, multifamily, self-storage, what is your exit strategy? That's the first thing you need to get clear on because you need to know what kind of debt you're putting on that deal. Is it short-term debt? Is it Fannie? Are you going to have prepayment penalties? That's what you got to figure out. I can't answer that question for you. In this part of the market cycle, asset prices are elevated. You're buying B and C properties at around the same cap rate. Fours for Bs, 4.5 for Cs, whatever. Why would I pay that much for a C property when I can pay a little bit more for a B property? The problem with the C, and we're buying Cs, but we're buying them at the right price. The problem with the C properties, you're paying so much. You're going to hold these things for the next 5, 6, 7 years. There's extensive capital expense items, especially things built in the 60s and 70s. You newer investors out there, cast iron plumbing, asbestos, all the roofs, all that. You have to have that in the budget in place. And you're buying these assets at an elevated price. If you can't get that rent up or all of a sudden, bam, something happens, you're in big trouble. So for us, we're looking for newer assets, 80s, 90s build. Get granular on this, everybody. This is what your buy right criteria is all about. Number of units you're looking for. The market, the submarket specifically, the median income. We're looking for around $50,000 plus median income in a specific area. We like townhomes. We love two beds. If we can find three beds in Knoxville, we're partying. We just signed on a 12-unit deal in Knoxville. Three beds. Nick, can't believe the price I paid, but rents are going to be $1,800, so it justifies it. So get crystal clear in what you're trying to buy. That's really important. In this part of the market cycle, like I said, assets are a little bit newer because we don't want to deal with the CapEx. And we have that long-term mindset. As Dr. Linneman said, you're investing for decades. 2 years are great. 2 years are bad. 6 years are okay. I'm going to hold this asset for the next 10 years. It's going to get older, but it's still going to be okay. So there's so many things you need to think about, but think about the exit strategy and what your criteria is for buying these assets is important. And I think long-term, where are you going to put money? Where's the money going to go? That's the thing. You're going to put in crypto is great. Crypto is fun, but it's not wealth creator. You hit the button, you're up 50%, that's it, you're out. There is such a low barrier to entry. And right now, it's hard to value those assets. People are they're actually going to real estate and they know that it is a hard asset. It's a basic human need. And there is a big demand for renters. You're looking at people who are younger, who can't afford housing, people who are older, who are downsizing. And that's why these rentals are so on fire. And for me, I think for the foreseeable future, I don't see them pulling back.
Three questions that are coming to my mind. So one of them is, what's your average kind of debt that you're looking for? Are you looking for long-term? Because you're talking about these apartments that you had back in 2013.
Great question.
Yeah.
Great question. First of all, the thing that does scare me about the market is 80% of all loans that are happening right now are bridge debt.
Oh, yeah. Like 3 to 5 year bridge loans.
You're buying a stable asset, bridge debt. Because you think you can get the rents up. And
syndicators.
We're doing that too, but we're using loan to cost with our community bank. But we're buying these assets at such great prices that we know that we've already proved the concept so many times because we know our markets so well. We know where rents are because we're already operating these things. But when you're buying it on a syndication, if something happens like an invasion on Russia or something really throws the world out of whack and you're expecting rents to go up 20%, and then all of a sudden you're underwriting and your debt right now is 4%, but then rates go to 5.5%. That blows the deal up. There's a risk in that. So we're doing loan to cost with our community banks. And on a couple of deals that are stabilized, we'll go to Fannie or Freddie and we will go. The deal we bought last year, an 85 unit deal. We have a yield maintenance on it. So it's a Fannie deal, 10 years. Problem with that is we bought it 85 or 90 a door. It's probably worth 130 a door. So that equity is trapped in that deal. We can't pull it out for the next 7 or 8 years. But that's okay because that thing is cash flowing like a beast. So looking at it and just be very particular on what your exit, have some type of flexibility with that exit strategy. We love LTC loan to cost and community banks because we're using that as quote unquote like the bridge. We get 2 years of interest only. After those 2 years, we're probably refining back to community. And then a year after that, we'll refi to agency.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so you're staying away from bridge as much as you can.
Yes.
You're doing it where it makes sense.
And that's why we're not closing a lot of deals, because a lot of deals don't make sense. That debt coverage ratio day one is just horrible. But second that's question. The risk. Fortune favors the bold. That's the thing. People who are taking risks 2 years ago, when me and you thought that the market was at a peak and people, you're buying that deal at what price? Now look back from 2 years ago and go, oh, wow, I wish I'd bought that. No, you wish you'd bought that, but that person took the risk. And that's what capitalism is all about. He was fortunate. He was brave and he made money out of it.
Yeah, that's my second question is what kind of levers are you tweaking? What kind of different changes are you making to your buy box, to your buying criteria? Because now it's like people that were looking for a 6 cap, they're not like, now they're okay with a 2 cap. Yeah. But it's also on the flip side of the coin. People are being, I feel, overly aggressive with some of these deals, and they're trying to put lipstick on a pig and make it look like something that it's not. I know that you and your team and your students and everyone with you are doing things the right way. So I'm curious to see how you're doing it.
It really, you have to revise this every few months because the market does change. Six months ago, we weren't doing this. Now we're basically buying these assets that are basic boxes, because this 3-bedroom townhome that we're buying, I think rents going in are at like $1,000. They've got to go to $1,800. So we're going to get a non-renewal to every resident, because you can't go from 1,000 to 1,800, but that's where the market is. So we're basically buying boxes that are in really good shape. We don't have to spend a ton of money on CapEx on them. And then we can actually perform the $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 per unit turn and just get the new resident in there. And there's going to be a waiting list. There's not many 3-bedroom townhomes in Knoxville. For our buy rate criteria, we're really trying to look at newer assets. And Brian, one of the things with this part of the cycle, we always hear in football, you got to give what the defense gives you. You got to take what the defense gives you. Right now, we're looking at smaller assets. 25 unit closed in December, 21 unit we're closing this week. We've got a 40, an 18, and a 12 all under contract. We're looking at that because those smaller assets, the private equity people, the institutions, they don't want the small deals. The 100 units plus, they're bidding them up so much that it doesn't make sense for us. There's a lot of risk in those assets. We'd rather stay with the smaller stuff. We already have efficiencies and scalability because we've already got assets around. We can just bundle these smaller assets into our bigger portfolio and manage them that way. That's what we're seeing right now in this part of the cycle that makes sense for us.
Yeah. So you're just going underneath the buy right criteria for the PE groups.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
Got it. Got it. There we go. There's my voice. Nice. You have me speechless, buddy.
I do that often, my friend.
Yeah. Here's a question about just generalities here. Okay. Mm-hmm. So multifamily, the term, like the asset class, we're becoming more and more of a nation of renters.
Mm-hmm.
Non-negotiable. This is happening because not only is this the trend, but now the hedge funds, the PE groups are making it a necessity. At what point do we reach a level to where we're like, holy shit, man, we cannot raise these rents any more than
that's
they are
because
these incomes are not rising with them.
Yep.
And I'm a landlord myself, and I see, like, I get it. And my rents, I'm going to raise mine as well for my 6 units, but it's just at what point, like, their incomes are not increasing at the rate that they need to be, at least. Mm-hmm. So yes, you have your California people coming in, you've got your tech people coming in, you've got your high earners are like, yeah. And they're putting their money like 40,000 over ask. It's just bananas.
Mm-hmm.
So where does the cookie crumble here? With at what point do we say, hey, we can't really bank on the rent increasing to get the ROI here?
That is the, I don't want to say the $1 million question, but think about it.
Question.
In Tennessee, Chick-fil-A, $19 an hour. $19 an hour at Chick-fil-A when 2 years ago it was $9 or $10 an hour. So there is definitely wage increases. Now you're going to have to look in each individual market at what rents are versus what mortgages are. You're going to have to look at the affordability of every market. As that affordability starts getting out of whack and you're looking at deliveries versus absorptions. So how many assets are being delivered in a market and how many are being absorbed? That's supply and demand. We're fortunate because in the Southeast, we have a lot of demand. We have a lot of people moving in.
Atlanta.
So that's what I'm saying. So in Atlanta is usually a boom or bust market. But when you have 1 or 2% population growth, that's another 50 or 60,000 people coming in a year that need housing. Are they building? They're not all looking for A assets. They're not building any older assets, are getting older, but there's not a lot of big supply in that. So it's really important to take a look at the affordability of the market. And they're going to hit a point. And that's what we're talking about. Nobody's really talking about recession because nobody knows what this economy is anymore. Because when I was growing up, you're going to a recession, you can lower interest rates to spur the economy. You can't do that now. It doesn't make any sense right now. Usually when you have demand, there's usually supply in the market. There's a ton of demand for cars. There's no supply. When the hell did that ever happen? So now there's no demand and there's no supply. So it's really strange. Now you have materials that are costing so much money and you're trying to build. And now people are trying to build and there's no supply of labor as well. So it's really, everything is so disjointed. So it's so hard to make these predictions, but inflation is real. And it's fine. I've been talking about inflation for the last 10 years. And I know there's been a ton. No one wants to report food and energy because that's been, they don't report it in CPI. But if you really think about it, 20% rent increases in the last year. That is rents from 350 in 2013 to 995 plus rubs. That's triple in 10 years. That is a huge, and I know, like you said, incomes, it just comes to the point where the market will take care of itself. There's going to come a point where people can't afford to pay it anymore. You can't impoverish the resident base. You just can't do that. That's what people want to do. You'll get pushback. You'll get rent control like you have in New York and California, which will create an even worse problem because all the deferred maintenance and all of that that comes along with that and the customer service, because you just can't keep up the properties. So just, we need to be careful not to impoverish our residents. And it's just, the thing that really irks me about this whole last 3 or 4 years, people have made money in real estate and they're not operators. They're just flippers. And especially in the multifamily space. And when they need to, when you'll see when things start cracking, when these people who are flipping these deals all of a sudden need to operate them, that's when the opportunity is going to come, because they're going to have a hot potato. They're not going to know how to operate this deal. They're going to crap it out. And there's going to be people like Jake and Gino and other operators out there that are going to be able to take this asset over and be able to run it. I don't know when that's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's a market cycle. If people have short-term memories, there are cycles in the market and it will happen. You just need to be prepared. And that's why the bridge debt is very challenging for me, because that's taking on a lot of risk. You're trying to time something. When you're trying to time the market, the only two times when you're worried about the valuation of your property is when you buy it.
Buy and when you sell.
And when you sell. You don't care any other time. And that's the thing. If you're trying to time something, there's more risk. There's reward, but there is risk. So that's why we're trying to really shy away from that.
What are you doing with your cash besides first class tickets to Hawaii?
I'm putting in whole life, believe it or not. I've got a couple of whole life policies. I've got policies for my children. I've got a policy myself. I've got a policy for my wife.
Borrow against it?
You can borrow. We call it the dual asset strategy. So we have a company called 100 Year Real Estate Investor. We're selling whole life to the real estate investor, because what's going on in Canada? They're not touching life insurance policies. They're freezing banks. But everyone needs to remember.
Can they not touch the life insurance policy?
Everyone needs to remember one thing. The laws are written by the rich for the rich.
Always.
So for most states, creditor protection, bankruptcy, it's all protected against whole life. I'm not a huge fan of the president, but I take a look at how much whole life he's got on his balance sheet. He's probably got $7 or $8 million, I think, of whole life on his balance sheet, cash value. Look at the Bank of America, $20 billion plus whole life versus 7 or 8 for stocks. I'm just saying all of these wealthy institutions want that tier one capital. It's really a cash management tool. That's what they're utilizing it for. It's there. It's safe capital. Not every dollar needs to be at risk. So I have that money in the policy. If I need it out, I'll pull it out. Obviously, going to pay interest on it, but I'm still collecting that interest that's already getting paid. So it's net a wash. Pull the money out, put the money into a deal. When that deal starts making money, pay back the life insurance. I've got that asset of life insurance and I've got the real estate. The dual asset strategy.
Talk more on this. I'm not that familiar. No, great.
It's really,
you can give us like a 5 minute overview, because I want to let you go back to the beach here.
No, when I talk about this, for me, it's really the wealthy mindset. People are going to say, hey, buy term, invest the difference. I get that if you're really young and you need some type of protection, but buying term is renting life insurance. Buying whole life is buying life insurance.
I'm 27. I have no idea about any of this that you're talking about right now.
So it's whole life for life. Just go to the dualassetstrategy.com. There's more information there. But really, even at your young age, people are going to say, oh, stay away from that. I got my first policy at 30 years old. I'm 50. I still got it now. The death benefit is still increasing. That's my protection. That's going to help me pay for my estate taxes, right? Money's going to go off. But in the meanwhile, there's a nice cash value that's growing there that I can pull out and I can borrow and I can utilize it for whenever I want. So for me, it's really utilizing my living benefits and my death benefits. And the younger you are, obviously the way life insurance works, premiums are going to be a lot cheaper because you're healthy and your mortality rates, you're probably going to, your generation is probably going to live to be 90 years old average rate. So you can imagine the mortality.
Oh, I'm going to live to 150, man. Let me tell you hitching something. My wagon to David Sinclair already.
That's the power. And the power is the opportunity cost. Stay away from 401ks, everybody. That's a
thank
contract.
You.
That's a contract.
Damian Lupo is going to come on about that.
Yeah, that's a contract with the government. Yeah, it's a contract with the government. They can change the rules whenever they want. When it's tax deferred, so when you retire, you've got $3 million in there. 30% of that's gone to taxes when you start pulling money out. And it's something where there's a vehicle where you're probably earning 3-4% a year, if you're going to be honest with yourself, once you take away all the fees and all the other crap. And it's something where you're sitting there and there's no opportunity cost. If you've got a deal that comes around, you can't touch that money in there. You've got to pull it out. I blew my 401k up. I paid the 10% penalty.
I did too.
Yeah. CostSeg wiped out my taxes. I needed to do that. I wouldn't recommend everybody to do that. Talk with a financial advisor. I didn't ask one because I knew that's what I needed to do. That deal's paid me 50 times over. And from what I pulled out, but I hate 401ks. It's not really investing. You're giving your money over to a mutual fund company that they diversify your money into different mutual funds that own the same stock. So what kind of diversification is that? I want control of my money. I want to be able to control and have the opportunity cost.
Yeah. And once you don't realize how dumb 401ks are until you try to pull money out of one, and you realize how freaking impossible it is. Yeah. So I'm going to have a human moment here and I'm going to say, yeah, I pulled 37,000 out of my, like, it was like 60. So you obviously have the taxes and everything that get withheld from in the 10% penalty. I was like, okay, I'm going to eat it because I was going to buy a laundromat. And then I'm like, waiting to buy a laundromat, I'm going to throw this into a couple stocks and some crypto, lost it all. Whatever. I'm human. We're all human. I'm still kicking. My net worth is tripled this year. But hey, you know what? I've got $3,000 to write off on my taxes and losses for the next 10 years. And so whatever.
Half full, bro. Half full. That's what I like.
But that goes back to how we began this conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm not emotionally attached to money. Mm-hmm. I don't lose sleep over that because I've got money coming in. And then it's just about developing income sources, planting trees, managing orchards, and then having your, what was it? Oh man, now it's escaping me. It's for the mentorship.
Pay
to play, seek to serve.
Yes, sir.
Pay to play, seek to serve. Yeah, that's all fantastic. Yeah. So at this point, I gotta let you go back to your family. You're at the beach, you're with your family. This has been absolutely fantastic. And now drop the website again for the life insurance information.
Oh, just go to dualassetstrategy.com. Or it's the 100YearREI.com. It really is a long-term mindset. This is not for somebody who wants to get rich overnight and make a few bucks. This really is long-termism. It's all about planning for the long term. But that's what multifamily is all about. It's about becoming an entrepreneur and about creating those other systems. You're with that whole life insurance, you are planting trees and you're managing, or I love that, dude. Which each policy you have, you're planting that one tree, and over time they continue to grow and continue to grow. So it's an awesome strategy for the long term.
I hate having cash.
Yes.
So I've got a lot. I'm sitting on some cash right now. So I would prefer, while I'm sitting on that, to have that somewhere to where it's gaining interest, it's growing, but I can also it's liquid. Yes. I want it to be liquid. 401k is not liquid at all.
Nope.
Yep. So as we finish up, where can people find you?
Oh, just go to Jake.
All over Google.
Yeah. No, just go to jakeandg.com. We've got the shows. If you're out there, you're married, you're looking for a show on communication, spousal support, how to work with your spouse. We've interviewed Dr. Gary Chapman, The Five Love Languages. I love podcasting like you. It's a medium just to describe, express yourself, have some fun, enjoy, entertain, meet great people. Be vulnerable, be transparent, and learn a lot from the process. Just go to jakeandg.com. You can check out all our podcasts there as well.
Perfect. Last question. What is one thing that you're really proud of in your life or business that a lot of people don't know about you?
I'm not really a proud person, to be honest with you. I'm proud that I was actually able to start Jake and Gino and not be afraid of other people taking deals from us. That scarcity mindset, it took a long time to overcome. Well, if I start this education, everyone's going to go out there and they're going to do deals, and I'm not going to find any deals myself. I'm teaching everyone the secrets. And that's what a scarcity mindset allows you to do. Whereas the abundance mindset is, I'm on the podcast right now with Brian because of Jake and Gino. I just spoke to all these amazing people because of this. I'm partnered up with students on one or two deals because of Jake and Gino. I'm learning every day because of Jake and Gino. So just catch yourself when you're going into that gap or that scarcity mindset and ask yourself, where's the abundance or the gain mindset?
Yep. Yep. And then every single time that I think about the analogy of filling up your cup to pour into others, one of my buddies, DJ Savoy, said you cut the bottom off the cup. So anything that gets poured into you flows through you and out to others.
Yes.
So then it never stops. So the pitcher of life, God, the universe pours into you.
Yes.
And it's going to pour into you 10 times out of 10 more than it's going to pour into the person next to you that's going to hold it all to the chest.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I love it. With that, my friend, I will let you get out to tan on the beach with your kids and your family. And I am going to go head over to the gym so I can live to be 150. So thank you, my friend. This is Brian and Jake and Gino of Jake and Gino. Sorry, Jake, you'll come on the podcast too, buddy. It's not your time. Not your time yet. Gino.
Thanks.
Signing off.
Take care.
Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to today's episode, I'm assuming you got value from it, so I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this show is to help over 1 million people do what they want, when they want, with who they want, and I can only do that with your help. There are 2 main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you could please leave me a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to 1 or 2 friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the people that we're looking to reach. Thanks in advance. Talk tomorrow.